Hi, thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to the Torah portion for August 19th and 20th, 2011, from sundown to sundown. This teaching is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. Akev, it is Deuteronomy chapter 7, starting in verse 12 to chapter 11, verse 25. The Haftarah is Isaiah 49, starting in verse 14 and going to 51, verse 3. The Brit Hadashah is Romans 8, 31 to 39, and Hebrews 11, verses 8 to 13. Akev. It has two translations. One is on the heel of, and the other is because. Now, the phrase on the heel of seems like not so related to the word because, but by the time that we get through with this Torah portion, I hope that I'll be able to pull those two together for you and explain why they really are related to each other. Let's go to Deuteronomy 7:12. And it shall come to pass, because you hearken to these ordinances and keep and do them, that Jehovah your God will keep with you the covenant and the mercy which he swore to your fathers. Akev is one of those strange Torah portions in the way that it starts. As I've already pointed out, the phrase on the heel of and the word because don't seem related to each other, yet Akev is translated in both of those ways. You know, most of the Torah portions, though, are named after the first few words of the first verse of the Torah portion. And Akev is not. That is really much stranger than the way that Akev is translated. The title word that the phrase from Deuteronomy 7:12, and it shall come to pass, is translated from is Hayah. So the first word of the Torah portion is actually Hayah. Now, in Hebrew, Hayah literally means, and it shall come to pass. That's the way it's translated into English. It's something that's forward-looking. I'm going to spend a little time dealing with Hayah and its forward-looking meaning and the ramifications and significance of its placement in the sentence, in the way that it was written in Hebrew, and also some other very important things that I think you're going to find interesting. But first, I want to talk about the word Ekev. Ekev is in Hebrew Ayin Kof Beit. The word Ekev is a root word that is the same root word as part of Jacob's name. The last part of Jacob's name is Akov, and it has the same Ayin Kof Beit. Now, when you add the Yod, which is where we get Yaakov, which means hand, and by the way, Yod is one of those letters that has very significant meaning. It's not only hand, but it also signifies the hand of God, which is, of course, a whole other teaching regarding Jacob. But when you take Yod, Akev, you get Yaakov. You get Jacob. So Akev literally means heel, like the heel of your foot. Okay, that's what the word Ekev means, okay, in its primary meaning. And that's where Yaakov's name comes from, because his hand was on Esau's heel when he was born, remember? Now, there is a prophecy about someone bruising something else. Let's go to Genesis 3, 15. And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. It shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. You see, here in Genesis 3:15 is a prophecy about the coming relationship between Esau and Jacob. And here at the end of days, we understand about the one who gets the head wound, i.e., we call him Antichrist. Now, the reference to the bruising of the heel has to do with the one that has the head wound, bruising Jacob. Who is Jacob? Well, of course, we are. We're Jacob. So Jacob was destined to have the heel as a reference to him, meaning us as well. But I want to explain something about the heel, because Akev is literally translated as on the heel of. Okay, years ago, let me tell you this story. Years ago, I had a sweet little mutt dog that I wanted to train. And so I took this dog to a training class. The first lesson that we learned was heel. Now, looking back on that, I realize that I was being shown by the Lord that heel is not just a body part. It's a discipline. And that is the meaning of Ekev in this week's Torah portion. Ekev, heel, is all about our discipline in our walk with God. And now, as we go through this teaching, keep in mind the scenario of an owner walking his dog. Not that I'm equating any of us with dogs, I don't mean that. Only that what we learn is that we are to be well healed. Have you ever heard of a dog being well healed? You even hear that about people. That person is well healed. What does that mean? That means that you walk close to the heel of your master, and you obey instantly the commands that your master gives. That's what it means to be well healed, or well ekevd. You see, that's how we're supposed to walk with the Lord. And the Lord says, Haya, you know, Haya being that, and it shall come to pass on the heel of, or because, okay, you're starting to catch where I'm going to go with this, right? I'm going to do these things for you. I'm going to bless you, because it will come to pass that you will be well healed and you will get the blessings. Now, the heel of the human foot is, of course, a balancing point of the body, and it also bears a lot of the body's weight at certain points in its stride. So if you think about this, the heel is really, really important to the body. Just because it's all the way down there at the bottom of the leg doesn't mean that it's not important. Ekev is also a word that is translated into English as the adverb because. Now, it also is translated as by, and, for, and if. But as I said earlier, Ekev is not the first word in the Torah portion. That first word is Haya. That's the first word. So let's turn our attention to the first word, Haya. Now, here's an interesting thing. Haya is spelled Vav He Yod He. Now, wait a minute. The tetragrammaton is Yod He Vav He. But Haya is Vav He Yod He. Do you see that they have the Yod and the Vav have just changed places? And as I said before, Hayah is translated as, and it shall come to pass. Well, who is it that makes things come to pass? Well, of course, it's Yehovah. You see, those same four letters in a different order are telling us who is going to make something happen in the future. The conclusion of the matter, then, resides in the Vav He Yod He. That's the conclusion of the matter. The beginning of the matter is the Yod He Vav He. So, the matter of anything that the Lord speaks is concluded even before the rest of the statement is made. You see, Hayah came first in the sentence, and then all of the other stuff that comes after it just affirms that it's going to come to pass. And rest assured that because, Ekev, you perform God's commands, He will keep the covenant with you and be merciful to you. That right there is the meaning of the entire Torah portion, even though it is not named Hayah. Now, there is something else about Hayah. We can look at it in another way. If we dissect it and take it apart and make it a word with two parts, it means Ha, the, Yah, sacred name, the sacred name. So what that is telling us is that since God's sacred name is in the very first word of the Torah portions, it's telling us that the 613 commandments that God says we must obey to get the blessings and not get the curses, that these are literally tied to God's name. You see, this is why God said, "Don't profane my name." Because if we claim to be His and are not keeping the commandments, we are profaning His name. Now, why do you suppose it is that this Torah portion is not named Hayah? Since even in the Hebrew text, Hayah is the first word and not the second word, and as I said before, most Torah portions use the first few words of the Torah portion as the name of that Torah portion. Why is it not named Hayah? Why is it named Ekev? Well, let's put it this way. It's putting the onus, it's putting the responsibility back on us to be to do God's commandments, to be in keeping with God's Torah. You know, God's name starts this Torah portion in kind of a reverse kind of order. God was not, though, going to start right off teaching people that they could break the covenant and that He would still keep this covenant if they broke it. Why? Because this is not the same covenant as the Abrahamic covenant. Now, He does keep both parts of the Abrahamic covenant. But when it comes to the Mosaic covenant, if we want His blessings, we have to cooperate by keeping His commandments. And so, it's named Ekev because that Ekev is our responsibility to be on the heel of, because we are keeping the commandments. You see how that puts the onus on us? That's why it's named Ekev. It's very important difference for this Torah portion than for other Torah portions. So now let's look at those first three words, which literally say Hayah Ekev Shema. It will be on the heel of, or because of heeding. It will be on the heel of heeding. It will be because of heeding. You see, that's the first three words of this Torah portion. There's another anomaly about this Torah portion. It actually comes in the middle of another teaching. I mean, we had last week's teaching, which ended in Deuteronomy 7:11, which says, "You shall therefore keep the commandments and the statutes and the judgments which I command you this day to do them." Then the very next verse is, "And it will come to pass because you will heed." You see how they really, those two verses actually go together, but they were sliced apart as two different Torah portions, but you have to read them together to understand what the Lord is saying here. So that's another anomaly about this Torah portion. Now let's take a look at the English words because and if. Because and if are adverbs. They are used generally as conjunction words. What this means is that they link direction with a result. Now let me repeat that. Because and if, which are two words that we translate into English from ekev, because and if, they link direction with a result. In other words, if you go in this direction, you will get this result. And that's what the Lord is teaching here. Haya ekev shema. Haya, it will come to pass. Here's your direction, because, or on the heel of, your heeding shema. As long as you're shemaing or heeding, you will see these things come to pass, which are what? The blessings. So if we're going in the right direction, we get the blessings. So now let's go on and let's learn a little bit about the blessings. First of all, we all know, but just in case there are people listening who don't know, God doesn't bless us just because we want Him to, ask Him to, or declare that He will bless us. You know, there are people in the world, in various religious organizations who say, well, just declare it and God has to do it. That's kind of the rabbinical thing, actually, you know, that's crept into Christianity, because that's what the rabbis believe. They believe that if they declare it, then God has to obey it. Well, that's kind of the attitude of, in fact, not kind of, it is the attitude of the name it and claim it crowd in Christianity. So, but that's not how it works. How it works is because you are on the heel of being obedient. And because you are on the heel of, you are getting the blessings. You are heeding. You are shemaing. So you are getting the blessings. Now, things do not always appear to be right in the world, as we all know. And perhaps some of you may be asking why it is then that even the most despicable people in the world seem to have blessings. And then there are those of us who seem to do not have blessings. Well, I can think of at least three reasons for this, and there may be more. One of the reasons that people who are not, let's say, believers in God get the blessings, why they manage to get the blessings, is because they accidentally manage to obey some of the 613 commandments. Now, you know, it's not possible for any human being to go through life and never, ever, ever obey something in the Torah. It's just not possible. At some point in your life, you're going to obey something, and God is not a respecter of persons. You know, even the heathens know the basics of Torah. So if the heathens practice the basics of Torah, God is going to bless them. Again, he is not a respecter of persons. The blessings and the curses are given the same to everyone. So it is up to that person who wants to receive the blessings to realize what brings the blessings and to give glory to God for them. But if they don't, they will receive blessings for obedience to the Torah nonetheless. And we're not talking about salvation here, just blessings. This is what Solomon meant when he said in Ecclesiastes 11:3, if the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth, and if the tree falls toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it shall be. See, the rain falls on everyone alike. Blessings are like rain that you get for obedience. Curses are like drought that you get for disobedience. And it's all up to you. But it isn't only being actively engaged in obedience that gets us blessings, but the longer we are obedient, the more that we have walked with God, the longer that we've walked with God, and the more that we have refined our relationship, the more our blessings will grow. Why? Because at the moment that you determine to follow the 613 commandments, not just accidentally obeying them, but deliberately obeying, you have to realize that there are still consequences waiting to catch up with you from times when you were not being obedient. But as time goes by, the action of the curses due you can be ameliorated because there is time between you and previous activities that warranted curses. But though ameliorated, consequences of past actions always have to be lived with. This is why it's better to start out life obeying the 613 than to wait until you're older. This is certainly an uncomfortable spot for some of us who have discovered and implemented the Torah later rather than sooner in our lives. So that's the first reason that it sometimes appears that people who don't deserve the blessings get the blessings. And a possible second reason for this could be that God has anointed them for his purpose, and it is necessary for them to have blessings so that they can carry out his plan. And then there's a third possible reason, and it could be that it depends on our definition of blessing. Now let's think about this for a minute, because, you know, here in America, we typically think that a big house and big cars and lots of money to waste, well, that, you know, these are blessings. Well, they're not. They actually come from the beast system. And God does not give us blessings from the beast system. God defines blessings as, you know, you've got a place in the promised land. You know, you're going to be in the promised land. That's a blessing. And that we will have more food than we can possibly eat, and lots of children. You see, there's nothing said in Scripture about houses, cars, and money to waste. In fact, it is not up to God to provide our dwellings. We have to provide that. Now, he may bless us with the means to do that, but we have to do that. So it is a despicable, destructive doctrine perpetrated by the prosperity teachers of the church who want you to worship the ancient Canaanite god called Mammon, that they teach that you get blessings for faith. That's a twisted doctrine. Yeshua said you can't worship God and Mammon. You know who Mammon is? Mammon was the ancient god of prosperity in Canaan. That's who Mammon is. Literally, you cannot serve two gods. Now, we equate Mammon with money because he was the Canaanite god of prosperity. And that's exactly what the church is teaching today when they say, just name it and claim it, you're going to get all the houses, cars, and money you want. God has to give it to you if you name it and claim it. Well, I'm sorry, that doesn't work that way. Now, God gave us a list starting in Deuteronomy 7, verses 13 to 24. This is how He defines blessings and rewards for obedience. He says, He will love you. Right there, that should be enough, right? He will bless you. He will multiply you. He will make your body fruitful. There will not be a barren male or female of any species among you. He will make your land fruitful. And he lists specifically corn, wine, oil, cattle, and sheep. He will remove all sickness from you, and he will lay diseases upon those who hate you. He will deliver you from those who cause you to be afraid. He will send hornets into your enemies. He will deliver your enemies into your hand little by little until they're exterminated. And he will deliver the kings of enemy nations into your hand as well, so that no one will be able to stand before you. You want to hear something interesting? You know there are 10 commandments? Well, there are 10 blessings. Isn't that interesting? 10 and 10. See, 10 commandments, you get 10 blessings. Obey the 10 commandments, get 10 blessings. See? Moshe summarizes the 10 blessings for us in Deuteronomy 8:1 and says, All the commandments which I command you this day shall you observe to do, that you may live and multiply, and go in and possess the land which the Lord swore to your fathers. Then Moses says, We're to remember everything that happened in the 40-year wanderings, including how God tested us to see what our intentions were toward him. Now, here's that repeated admonition for us to always place ourselves at the foot of Mount Sinai, but we also have to remember the 40-year wanderings. Why? Because during the tribulation, we're going to be experiencing the same things that happened to them in the 40-year wanderings. So we're going to want to know what those things were, what those tests were, because you know what happened? See, that first group, they failed. But now, here at the end, we have not only the test, but we have the answers, too. So if we're smart, we'll study what they did so that we won't make those mistakes and we'll be able to go in and take the land. Now, Moses mentions the manna again. He does this again to explain that God let us go hungry so that he could test our hearts. But then he fed us with manna. You see, this is the very thing that Yeshua came teaching. In Matthew 4:4, he said, It is written, Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Where did he get that? He got it from Deuteronomy 8:3, where it says, And he humbled you, and suffered you to hunger, and fed you with manna, which you knew not, neither did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread only, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of Yehovah does man live. So you see, God used our hunger, and he's still using our hunger today to test our hearts. But we need to remember that we don't live by physical bread, but also spiritual bread that comes out of the mouth of God. That's why we pray, give us this day our daily bread. And who is our bread? It is Yeshua. So, obedience tests us. Obedience tests us, like when we get hungry and we're not fed yet. What is our heart going to do? Sometimes the things that we think are tests for us may be consequences catching up with us, but they could also be tests from the Lord. And sometimes, you know, we just don't know. We just don't know. So it's just good to keep our heart in the right place either way. Now let's go down to Deuteronomy 8:17. And when you say in your heart, "My power and the might of my hand has gotten me this wealth." You see, this is kind of like thoughts that you're not supposed to have, because we get the blessings for obedience because God said he would give them to us, not because we deserve them or that we have the power to get them. If we actually got what we deserve, we'd all be dead. So, instead, God provides a way for us to be blessed because he loves us and prefers that we not suffer. Now, this may sound like a stupid question, but stick with me for a minute. Why would God not want his people to suffer? Well, it is because when we are blessed and not suffering, we shine forth his glory in the world. Now, when we're blessed, but we are suffering through trials, and we are still being obedient, we are still shining his light into the world. Our obedience, then, is an example to the world that God's way is a better way, no matter which way it comes to us, whether it comes in the form of testing or whether it comes in the form of blessing. Now, how else can he get this message out to the world? Well, in some ways, blessings are kind of like the allowance that we give our children. You know, when the neighbor's kids see that your kids are getting allowances, you know, they get jealous and they want to come and do chores and do the stuff that will get them rewarded as well. Now, there's a second warning about our thoughts, and that is that we are not to think that our righteousness is the reason that God destroys our enemies. Let's go to Deuteronomy 9:4. "Speak not in your heart after that the Lord your God has cast them out from before you, saying, 'For my righteousness the Lord has brought me in to possess this land, but for the wickedness of these nations the Lord drives them out from before you.' Not for your righteousness or for the uprightness of your heart do you go to possess their land, but for the wickedness of those nations the Lord your God drives them out from before you, that he may perform the word which the Lord swore to your fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." You see, the reason that God's going to destroy our enemies is because they are evil, not because we're righteous or good. And in particular, in our future, hopefully, when we get to go into the promised land, we need to know that getting to go there is not because we are so wonderful. We get to go to the promised land to live without God's enemies being there because they are wicked, not because we are righteous. But also, it is because God made a promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and he is going to keep that promise. Now, we believe that we're getting ready to be the last generation to ever take the promised land. And once we are there, it will remain our inheritance forever because, Ekev, we have become well healed, and God has then removed the evil people from the land, and he has fulfilled his promise to our forefathers. Now, I want to elaborate a little bit on what living in the land will be like, because this Torah portion also deals with that. Part of the blessing that falls under the blessing of you're going to have this wonderful land that gives you all the food you ever need is the accompanying blessings that go with that from Deuteronomy 11:10. "For the land where you go to possess is not as the land of Egypt from where you came, where you sowed your seed and watered it with your foot or irrigated it as a garden of herbs or a vegetable garden, But the land where you go to possess it is a land of hills and valleys, and drinks water of the rain of heaven. You see, the promised land soaks up water from the rains. So there's no more drainage problems, no more irrigating, no more watering. This is a land that God Himself looks after. And in verse 12 it says, a land which the Lord your God cares for. The eyes of the Lord your God are always upon it from the beginning of the year even to the end of the year. Being able to live life in the promised land is the ultimate blessing for obedience. It is because God Himself takes care of that land, and the land in turn will take care of us. When Scripture says He takes care of the land, it isn't talking about Him having some kind of warm, fuzzy feelings for the land. No, it literally means He takes care of the land. But let's remember that if we forget God's words, then the blessings will be shut off, as it says in verse 17. So, in chapter 11, we learn the ways to avoid the ever-present human frailty of memory loss, starting in verse 18. Therefore, shall you lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand. Hey, we got that lesson last time too, last Torah portion, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes. Now let me stop there, and let me just share with you that that word frontlets is tophapha, and it literally means a circular binding. So what that's saying is what you wear on your hand as the sign, that it will go around between your eyes. It's going to go around and round and round as a binding between your eyes. It doesn't mean you have to put strange little boxes on your head. Okay, then in 19 it says, and you shall teach them to your children, speaking of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall write them upon the doorposts of your house and upon your gates, that your days may be multiplied, and the days of your children in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers to give them, as the days of heaven upon the earth. So, Deuteronomy 11:21, you see, addresses length of life. It says that your days may be multiplied. Your days will be multiplied not just because you kept the commandments, but because you bound them on your hand, and you taught them to your children, and you wrote them upon the doorposts of your house and your gates. That's what gets your days multiplied. And doesn't everyone want multiplied days of life? You know, living longer right now is an issue for those of us who are aging and who do really hope to live to see and possibly get through the tribulation and go into the promised land. Disobedience could kill some of us off before the tribulation comes, and then that would mean that we missed our chance to be here to see Yeshua coming through the clouds while we're still alive and not having to be resurrected. So, chapter 11, verse 22 gives us another summary of His blessings and promises to us. It says, for if, there you go, Ekev, if you shall diligently keep, or pay attention to that word, all these commandments which I command you to do them, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all His ways and cleave to Him, then will the Lord drive out all these nations from before you, as in during the coming tribulation, and you shall possess greater nations and mightier than yourselves. You know, those nations called Saudi Arabia, Syria, Lebanon, Iran, Iraq, Jordan, and so forth. Every place whereon the soles of your feet shall tread shall be yours, from the wilderness and Lebanon, from the river Euphrates, even unto the uttermost sea shall be your coast. See, the promised land will include much more area than the state of Israel currently enjoys. And verse 25 says, "There shall be no man able to stand before you, for the Lord your God shall lay the fear of you and the dread of you upon all the land that you shall tread upon, as he has said unto you." Now, these are the blessings and the promises, and I guarantee you that keeping them is worth everything. All we have to do is learn to heal. We need to learn to stay close to God, on the heel of God. And when he says, you know, we're going to turn right or we're going to turn left, that's what we do. We do as we would expect our pet dog to do. Match the master's step as he walks through our lives. That's it for this week. Shalom.